Hi, I'm Jim Shear, host of 180 Degrees, a podcast brought to you by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland. In this series, I talk to climate leaders about how they first connected to the urgent need for climate action. We go back to their roots and talk about their journeys, discover what drives them and what keeps them motivated. We also explore the essential ingredients required for leadership on climate action here in Ireland and how we might impact internationally. Nothing short of a societal movement is now needed to ensure a livable planet for our children and future generations.
Erline, you're very welcome to the SEAI podcast, 180 Degrees. It's great to have you.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward.
I wonder if we could start with the interview style question, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your career to date.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm very happy to share. So I'm going to move backwards. So where I'm today and moving forward a little bit, how I got here. So currently I'm helping scientists in the field of nature and sustainability to increase the outreach of their results, because many scientists are doing excellent work. But if their results only stay hidden in hard to understand scientific publications, then we can't, of course, use these insights to take action towards a healthier planet. So what I, for example, do is turn their difficult to understand scientific publication into very easy to understand articles so that every one of us can understand it, and add actionable steps so that we know what we can do based on research in our daily lives.
It sounds like you're crossing an essential bridge that needs to be crossed from technical, maybe often sometimes technical research to policymakers who need to translate that and have that have an impact.
Exactly. So it's interesting because science does research or provides us insights on a whole broad range of topics, which we can as individuals build upon. We can also as companies build upon it, as policymakers, so on many different levels. And indeed, scientists often don't have time to work on articles like this, communicate it, and well, they are really good at doing research. So I think it's wonderful when we work together and others can support them in doing this part of the work.
It's really interesting. I think I've often been talking to scientists and trying to help them communicate to policymakers, but it sounds like you're talking about a new function in between the scientists and the policymakers. You refer to yourself as a science communicator. Have I got that right? Is this sort of a new field that you're defining that as a field on its own?
Yes, I think so, because also in other fields we have like the technical experts, so to say. And we have people who need to use this technical stuff or what they offer. But if we can't communicate with each other, then, for example, with software, so when someone programs a really great piece of software, but we don't know how to use it and we can't communicate with each other, then it's not helpful. So we need someone in between who understands the needs and the experiences of the users, and someone who understands the technical stuff in case of computer programs. And I feel that's exactly the same with these scientific parts of nature and sustainability, so that we can use what they created, the valuable things they are doing.
Excellent. And you didn't just start there in that position. You've had a career to date, and you started in another area completely. Could you talk us a little bit about your initial connection to, I guess, environmental issues or climate issues, starting with your early career and perhaps bringing us up to now?
Yes. So before I started my own sustainability journey, I was working in IT as a cybersecurity expert, as an ethical hacker. So that was indeed completely differently. And I was working for an employer at that time. And interestingly, they set up a challenge for us as employees to come up with ideas how they could become more environmentally friendly. And I thought that was a brilliant idea. So I started brainstorming what they could do. But during that brainstorm, I came up with an idea that I could do by myself. And because I believe that a better world starts with myself, I put that idea into practice. And that idea was a 365 Sustainable Decisions Challenge, meaning that I made my own daily life more environmentally friendly for every day for a year. And not only doing these things once, of course, but to keep on going and keep them up, because they all build up and eventually, of course, make a huge positive difference. And that's how I got into this sustainability work. And I started sharing these ideas on social media, and that got a lot of traction. People love them, managed to put them into practice into their daily life as well. And this developed into this science communication that I told you before. And because I'm an educator from early on as a child, I already liked to share knowledge and skills with others. It is, well, all coming together in my work now, because interestingly, these hacker skills, so to say, really helped me to analyze my own daily life and come up with new ideas to, well, make my daily life more environmentally friendly.
It's quite a journey. And from cybersecurity, we can't go on unless I ask you about what an ethical hacker is. We need to start there. And then I want to ask a lot more about the 365-day challenge. But what's an ethical hacker?
Yes. So an ethical hacker is like one of the bad guys who attacks, for example, a website. And then the bad guys want to steal data or make sure that the website doesn't work anymore. But what I do is I do that for a customer. So I look at the security of, well, I focus on websites, but you can also test hardware, computer programs, and so on. But I look at websites, and then apart from misusing the vulnerabilities that I find, the weak spots I find in their website, I write a report and communicate with them. This is what I found. This is how it works to attack. This is why it's broken, and this is what you can do to improve it, so that they can go through the report, fix it, and then the website becomes safer so that these bad guys can't steal data, for example.
This is completely news to me. The only hackers I've been exposed to are those in Hollywood movies, and they don't show the ethical ones. So it's great to hear that you're out there. So in your work as an ethical hacker, the company challenged you, or they asked you for some information on how they could become more environmentally conscious and sound. And you made a really personal choice there to take something on yourself. And it doesn't sound like an insignificant challenge. It wasn't sort of 7 days, I'm going to do something. It was a whole year. How did you come up with 365 different actions to take? Or did you have to double up?
So the most important things is that I just got started. I looked at my own daily life and, well, basically asked myself the question, how can I do better? And I found some things were, well, relatively obvious, like having a shorter shower, for example. I can save a lot of water. But I also use these hacker skills, because when I look at the website, I think, okay, what is the normal use of a website and how can I do it differently to crack the website, so to say? And I could ask myself the same questions. Okay, how is my daily life normally and what kind of changes can I make to make it more environmentally friendly? So, for example, I also have been analyzing my bin, looking, okay, what ends up in my bin? And, for example, if I have a bag for a bread and I just put the bread in that bag in the shop, walk home, take the bread out and throw the bag in the bin, then I can think, okay, maybe next time I bring my own bag to the shop, put it in there, and then I don't have that bag in my bin. So by analyzing that way, I came up with many ideas how to reduce waste. Sometimes I also got inspired by ideas I found on the internet. Sometimes I improved something and then came up with an idea how I could improve it even further, just to name a few.
Oh, great. You must have grappled with the question of, you know, can I as an individual make a difference on this big challenge that is a global one? Having had the experience of taking on something every day for a year, do you now believe that more fully? Do you think it's completely false and it's only big fossil companies and governments that can do things? Or where are you now on the spectrum of belief?
Well, I'm 100% sure that even as individuals, we can make a huge difference, and that this difference is usually even bigger than we realize. And that's because of two reasons. The first reason is that we already make a difference by making these changes ourselves, of course, and they add up over time. But we also, and this adding up over time is important. And I have an image in mind of a leaf with a snowflake falling on it. When we take one action and that represents one snowflake on that leaf, that doesn't really make a difference. It hardly moves, nothing really happens. So it feels like nothing happens. But with time, more and more snowflakes start falling on that leaf. And at some point, there is one tiny snowflake that weighs just as little as all the other ones. And that snowflake makes all the snow slide off that leaf. So that one snowflake made a huge difference, but couldn't have done so without the other snowflakes being there. And that's why I believe that keeping on doing things helps adding up to this pile of snow, making a huge, huge difference. And another reason why I'm 100% sure that we can make a huge difference is because people look at each other for behavior. So, for example, maybe you've already looked yourself out the window and asked yourself, what should I wear today? And if then people are wearing jackets, you're likely to wear a jacket as well, or wear a t-shirt or whatever. So when we take actions and make a positive difference, then people look at us and see what we're doing. And even when we don't say anything, it's very likely that they get inspired to do the same. And this helps us to set up a snowball effect, because when they then change their behavior as well, and others see that they are changing, they are inspired to change as well, and so on.
You've also done a lot of thinking around digitization of the energy system.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say for listeners what you mean when you say digitization around when it comes to energy use?
Yes. So I'm working with the United Nations on this topic, combining my knowledge about cybersecurity and sustainability, because the energy system, the smart grid that we know today, is heavily dependent on digitalization. Because in the past, we had just a few energy providers that sent electricity or energy to houses. But today, we have a lot of so-called prosumers, so people like you and I who consume electricity but also produce it, for example, through solar panels on our roofs. And this makes the number of entry points into the grid a lot larger, which makes this grid a lot more complex. And here, digitalization is extremely important to make this all work. And with digitalization, we also, of course, have the cybersecurity aspect that needs to be taken into account so that this critical infrastructure continues to work well.
It's such an interesting topic, and it's something that not everyone in Ireland will be aware of. I know that we have record uptake rates for solar PV at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of people are seeing that as an attractive option. Mm-hmm. And of course, with the latest EU directives, they're able to get some financial payment for sending electricity back to the grid.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the benefits beyond that of a digitized energy system and smart grid that you've come across in your work?
So digitalization also really helps us to gather a lot more data and in a real-time and more detailed way. And the good thing about real-time and detailed data is that we can make better predictions and better decisions on how to, for example, extend the grid. When we, for example, now have a lot of electrical vehicles and we see that there is an increasing need to recharge them, then the grid needs to be adapted as well, so that these cars can actually be recharged and not overload the system, causing a breakdown, for example. And here, digitalization is also extremely helpful.
Do any people find it a scary term. I mean, there might be concerns that people have about sharing data, so that things, even maybe without knowing what that's for, but mm-hmm. if it helps the grid operator, for example, run the grid more efficiently or save emissions, have you thought about that? How this idea that we'd share our data, do people seem concerned about that? Mm-hmm. Or are they generally willing to do that? Or does that vary across jurisdiction maybe or country?
So whether people are willing to do so or not, I think depends mostly on what they believe that is being done with the data. When they believe that this is being misused, then we're of course not, well, happy to share it. Or when we believe that it can potentially be misused in the future. But when data and information is put to good use and it helps us, then we can contribute by sharing data to a more sustainable future as well. That could be then one of the actions that we were talking about. So it very much depends. And it also depends very much on, how things are put into practice to tell whether it's put to good use or not.
Erlein, your most recent project is what initially grabbed my attention and was how we got introduced to each other. Can you explain the high-level concept behind green tourism or exploring Earth without traveling?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm very excited to do so because this is a very, very exciting project and I think we can all benefit from this. So in our today's world, we hear a lot about decarbonization, which means reducing CO2 emissions as a way to mitigate climate change and reduce the negative effects that we see almost daily around us with floods and wildfires and so on. At the same time, we of course want to explore the world, and also exploring the world is important because when we know how beautiful our planet is and we have experienced it ourselves, then we are way more likely to be motivated to conserve this beauty and care well for nature. But this sounds like two opposites that can't be combined. So what I set up is a project which makes both possible at the same time. So exploring the world without traveling, and that involves beautiful nature walks all around the world through short videos, about 15 minutes. And these videos are filmed by a local who lives there. So this person also didn't need to travel a lot and records the video in a way while walking this route him or herself, which means that when we watch the video, it really feels as if we are walking there ourselves. So this way through the YouTube channel, we can already visit the Philippines, Indonesia, Kenya, Colombia, Lithuania, Poland, and many more countries. So we can really explore many different places. And the good thing as well is that when you want, you can activate a guided tour in the subtitles. So when you want to know more about what you're seeing, about the plants, about the area, sometimes about the country, about nature and sustainability in general, then you can learn more as well, which of course helps to understand what is going on better as well. So it combines many different aspects of sustainability, and it is very beneficial to our health as well, because visiting nature is of course the best way to explore and benefit from nature. But as a second best or a good alternative is watching these videos, because it makes us feel like we experience nature as well, which makes us, for example, more relaxed.
There's a range of benefits that you've thought about that come from this. Could you talk a little bit more about those? Because there's quite a long list.
Yes, it's. I actually made a list of all the SDGs, and there are quite a few. So I already mentioned a few, like health benefits, that we don't have these carbon emissions, CO2 emissions, because we don't travel. We can get educated, but also because locals who live there, I hire these people to make these videos, which means that we support local communities as well, because they earn a living by making these videos. well, which reduces poverty, for example, one of the SDGs as well. It is also a collaborative effort. So it's now a project from people around the world, for people around the world, because from all these countries, people are involved. And yeah, the list is much longer. I would have to look up what else was there, because there were so many. I don't have them in mind. If you want, yeah, I can look it up. But
I mean, cost savings, you had time efficiency, and accessibility was another really interesting one. Have you tested this with some audiences, and what sort of reaction are you getting? I mean, you're a scientist and a science communicator, so mm-hmm. I imagine, you know, you're putting these videos up, but you're also, you know, sort of monitoring their effect and asking people about mm-hmm. what they're getting out of it. What sort of feedback are you getting?
Yeah, I'm not doing scientific studies on this, because that's that's a lot of work, and I would of course be happy to collaborate with scientists on this, but what spontaneous feedbacks I already got from people who for example indeed don't have the money or are physically not able to travel the world anymore, and they are really, really happy to be able to explore the world even though they're physically unable to do so. And even because it's on YouTube, we can access it everywhere. It's freely available. That's also one of the advantages of this. So even if we, for example, are in a hospital laying in bed, we can go on a brief holiday in Japan, for example.
I mean, humans have a desire to travel and to move. And Do you think it's going to take people to open their minds a little bit to this kind of idea as an alternative to this maybe innate need to go everywhere and, mm-hmm. and experience things firsthand? I mean, that's I think going to be a question for a lot of people who haven't maybe sat down and watched such a video or tried such an experience. It's like, sure, it's going to be second best compared to going there. How would you respond to that?
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure that it makes a huge, huge difference. I remember you telling me that you watched a video and told me, well, I've been there now, so I don't need to fly there anymore. And interestingly, what I also noticed when I started a project, I then traveled back to the Netherlands to visit my parents. And these videos and looking at nature so closely really opened my eyes about for the beauty around me. So I realized, wow, where I grew up is actually very, very beautiful. And I knew it wasn't ugly or anything, but I never realized how beautiful it is. And that is fascinating to see how much beauty we can see right outside our doors. And what I've also heard people say, which I think is also interesting, that when we see nature across the globe, that sometimes a route in, for example, Lithuania is very similar to a route in the US, which means that we can enjoy a route close to home just as much as traveling to the other side of the world.
That's a fantastic answer. And most of our podcast guests, actually all of them, had talked about their own personal connection to nature. And some had mentioned that, you know, this is an innate thing in human beings. This isn't just mm-hmm. something that, you know, some of us have and some of us don't. But it might be that some of us don't feel as connected to it, given how busy our daily lives are and those kind of things. So it's really interesting to hear you say that, you know, through the videos, watching the worldwide videos when you went home, then your senses of the nature around you were somehow heightened. Mm. I mean, that's an amazing effect.
And you're right that this connection with nature, or the other way around, our disconnection from nature is, according to the science I've been studying, the root cause of our environmentally friendly behavior. And that's also the idea behind this YouTube channel, to allow us to reconnect with nature, because when we reconnect and we love nature more again, then what we love, we are more willing to care for, because we all love our children and then want to care for them and family and so on. And when we care better for, or want to care better for our planet, we are intrinsically motivated, so we want to make a positive difference for nature instead of feeling that we have to because the government, for example, tells us. And that is when we can make a huge, huge difference, when we all want to make this positive change.
that really opens my eyes. I work in the data and work with a lot of engineers and economists and policymakers, and it'd be very rare that we were talking about anything beyond the technologies that we need to deploy and how fast we need to deploy them. We do talk about climate conversations and needing to have a movement of people behind this, and that we all need to come together on this. But we don't list, for example, watching nature videos or meditating and building our connection to nature and realizing it and any of the inward journey. We don't list those kind of things as climate actions. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like a very important part of the puzzle.
I believe actually that this psychological part is the basis of where we should start, because, well, we just spoke about reconnecting with nature, but also why are making people a difference? People do things for two reasons. One is moving towards something they want to achieve, and others move away from a certain kind of pain. And taking this psychological difference into account is very important to make sure that when we take a certain action or inspire others to do something, that we take these both points of view into account. And also this motivation we spoke about, when we try people to become motivated by extrinsic motivation, so external support that can be helpful. At the same time, this intrinsic motivation where we want to do something is really strong, because that will carry on even after the financial support is gone, for example. And when someone has really integrated this want into their daily life at home, then they will carry this with them to their jobs as well. And if it's part of us, it's very unlikely that at home we make a positive difference and then at work we suddenly don't care about that. That's not how it works. So then at work we also want to make a positive difference, and then companies can become more environmentally friendly, governments, because, well, companies, governments and so on, they all consist of people, of humans. So this psychology is all about it. And there is a saying in general that, I don't know, 80% about success is about the psychology, and only 20% is about the skills. And we have plenty of skills, we have plenty of technologies, we have plenty of solutions. So why are we not implementing them? And I believe that's because of our psychology, about our values, what we value in life, for example. Is it GDP, economic factors, or is it about well-being, etc.?
So you've made a lot of videos. You might let us know how many are up there, but they're growing all the time. Mm-hmm. You have a set of instructions for people who might wish to make videos from, mm-hmm. from their locations. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna try and make one myself when the weather is good.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah.
Where do you see this project going? Have you ideas about how to evolve it, or are you sort of just waiting to see what happens, or what's your thinking?
So I'm really excited because this can grow in many, many different ways. So now I have about 40 videos from different locations all around the world. And of course, I'm continuing to have an even bigger coverage of the world. That's why I'm looking for different countries, but also within the same country, different places. So that's one way this is growing. Another way is that at some point I can not only do share walks, but the channel is called Explore Nature with X at the beginning. So Explore Nature, which means that this is not just nature, what we see on land, but it can also be Explore Nature on the water. So at some point I can also ask a diver. I can't dive myself, so I would have to find experts on that to film underwater and create similar videos with the same set of requirements underwater, which I think is also fascinating to see. And that's even more a place where most of us can never go, because when we can't dive, we will never be able to go there. And virtual reality is also an awesome way, so that we can not just look forward and follow the camera as we can see in the video, but ourselves decide in what direction we watch with our VR headset. I so far didn't require a VR headset yet, because I want to make this sustainable by design, and because not many people have VR headsets at the moment, I want to make it accessible to all and not have them buy any equipment. So yeah, just some examples of how this can develop. And I'm always thinking about exciting ways. I'm always open for new ideas. So who knows what else?
Elaine, I think this is some of the most interesting and exciting science communication that I've heard for a long time. I really appreciate you sharing your experience and expertise in this area, the science behind it, but also the psychology and the feeling. And thank you for your beautiful words, which I think are very enrolling. And I think most people now will probably follow a link below this, wherever they're accessing this podcast, and check out some of your videos. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend it. There's some beautiful light music in the background of some of them, and the nature sounds are there with all of this, the birds and the animals, and it's really nice and soothing. And I look forward to hearing more about your work and about some of the impacts that you're seeing. We look forward also, I think you have a book coming out.
Yes, that's also actually very interesting, also about the psychology. So the book is published by Springer in the next few weeks. It's called A Guide to a Healthier Planet: Scientific Insights and Actionable Steps Towards Making a Difference for Climate Change, Pollution and Biodiversity. And this book covers a broad range of consequences of what's going on, but also solutions of how we can contribute to make a positive difference, and these actionable steps for us in daily life we talked about. And it also has a whole chapter on many different psychological aspects of why we are not further ahead in our journey towards a more sustainable future. So I, very much invite you to have a look at that as well. It's also easy to understand science communication, so it perfectly fits to what we have been discussing today.
Thank you so much. And it's really clear to me that beyond the economics and the engineering, we need a lot more of your kind of science and expertise to be part of the mix as we try to solve this climate crisis that we're in. It's an essential element. So Dr. Elaine van Hanuchten, thank you so much for joining us and sharing all of your work. And we look forward to following what you do next with great interest.
You're very, very welcome.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed our conversation and it's left you in action and hopeful for our future. Please visit seai.ie/podcast for information on each of our guests this season and links to further relevant material to support you around your own climate actions or resources if you are suffering from any climate anxiety. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to 180 Degrees and rate the podcast to help us spread the word.